January 2012 in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are still in Chapter 7, entitled Knowledge of the Absolute, and we are in Text 24. That's 724.
What page is that?
Avyaktam vyaktam apannam manyante mama buddhayaha param bhavma jananto mamavyam anuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. Purport. Those who are worshippers of demigods have been described as less intelligent persons, and here the impersonalists are similarly described. Lord Krishna, in his personal form, is here speaking before Arjuna. And still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. Yamunacharya, a great devotee of the Lord, in the disciplic succession of Ramanujacharya, has written a very appropriate verse in this connection. He says, Tvam Shila Rupa Charitai Padamat Prakrishtai Satvena Satvakataya Pabalaischa Shastrai Prakyata Daiva Padamartha Vidham Mataischa Naivasada Prakritaya Prabhavanti Bodhum. My dear Lord, devotees like Vyasadeva and Narada know you to be the personality of Godhead. By understanding different Vedic literatures, one can come to know your characteristics, your form, and your activities, and one can thus understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, the demons, the non-devotees, cannot understand you. They are unable to understand you. However expert such non-devotees may be in discussing Vedanta and the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, it is not possible for them to understand the personality of God. In Stotra Ratna 12. In the Brahma Sanghita, it is stated that the personality of God cannot be understood simply by study of the Vedanta literature. Only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the personality of the Supreme be known. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated that not only are the worshippers of the demigods less intelligent, but those non-devotees who are engaged in Vedanta and speculation on Vedic literature without any tinge of true Krishna consciousness are also less intelligent. And for them, it is not possible to understand God's personal nature. Persons who are under the impression that the absolute truth is impersonal are described as abuddhaya, which means those who do not know the ultimate feature of the absolute truth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that supreme realization begins from the impersonal Brahman and then rises to the localized supersoul, but the ultimate word in the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead. Modern impersonalists are still less intelligent, for they do not even follow their great predecessor, Shankaracharya, who has specifically stated that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Impersonalists, therefore, not knowing the supreme truth, think Krishna to be only the son of Devaki and Vasudev, or a prince, or a powerful living entity. This is also condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 9.11. Avadananti mamudha manushim tanam ashratam. Only the fools regard me as an ordinary person. The fact is that no one can understand Krishna without rendering devotional service and without developing Krishna consciousness. The Bhagavatam 10.14.29 confirms this. Atapite deva padamba jodvaya prasada lesha anugahita evahi janati tattvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya eko pichadam vichinvan. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the supreme personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. One cannot understand the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna, or his form, quality, or name, simply by mental speculation or by discussing Vedic literature. One must understand him by devotional service. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, beginning by the chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then only Can one understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Non-devotee impersonalists think that Krishna has a body made of this material nature and that all his activities, his form, and everything are maya. These impersonalists are known as mayavadis. They do not know the ultimate truth. The 20th verse clearly states, Kamaistaista rita gana padyante nyadevata. Those who are blinded by lusty desires surrender unto the different demigods. It is accepted that besides the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are demigods who have their different planets, and the Lord also has a planet. As stated in the 23rd verse, Devan Devyajo Yanti Madbhakta Yanti Mamapi. The worshippers of the demigods go to the different planets of the demigods, and those who are devotees of the Lord of Lord Krishna go to the Krishna Loka planet. Although this is clearly stated, the foolish impersonalists still maintain that the Lord is formless and that these forms are impositions. From the study of the Gita, does it appear that the demigods and their abodes are impersonal? Clearly, neither the demigods nor Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are impersonal. They are all persons. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has his own planet, and the demigods have theirs. Therefore, the monistic contention that ultimate truth is formless and that form is imposed does not hold true. It is clearly stated here that it is not imposed. From the Bhagavad Gita, we can clearly understand that the forms of the demigods and the form of the Supreme Lord are simultaneously existing and that Lord Krishna is Satchit Ananda, eternal blissful knowledge. The Vedic literature confirms that the Supreme Absolute Truth is knowledge and blissful pleasure, Vijnanam Anandam Brahma, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.9.28, and that he is the reservoir of unlimited auspicious qualities, Ananta Kalyana Gunatma Kosal, Vishnu Purana 6.5.84. And in the Gita, the Lord says that although he is Aja, unborn, he still appears. These are the facts that we should understand from the Bhagavad Gita. We cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be impersonal. The imposition theory of the impersonalist monist is false as far as the statements of the Gita are concerned. It is clear herein that the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Krishna, has both form and personality. Om Jnana Timarandasya, Jnanandana Shalakaya, Chakshu Unmiditam Mena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Prabhupada. So this is a central point in our philosophy, is that ultimately we have no power on our own to see the absolute truth in its true nature. Because we have chosen to turn away from the personality of Godhead and come to this world. And so our vision is clouded, our ability to see, hear, think, everything is affected by the modes of nature. And so our very sense of ourselves, what to speak of our understanding of that which is beyond the purview of our senses, is imperfect. We know that's lesson number one, that you're not the body, you're a soul. And if you get that far, you realize that you can't really understand the soul without a source of higher knowledge. Even the soul is a mystery. That's why Krishna says, Ashtayava Pashyati Kashchidenam, Ashtayava Vadadita Daivachanya, that those who hear about the soul, they think it's amazing. They think it's, and many people, they don't, it doesn't seem to make any sense to them. Because there's so much involved in the bodily concept of life that that's all that really makes sense. But what to speak then of the Supreme Soul? So in many places in the Bhagavad Gita, several places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about how he reveals himself according to our surrender, according to our devotional service. In other words, the all-powerful person is completely independent. He cannot be forced to do anything. He cannot be forced to reveal himself. The analogy is given of some powerful person in this world. How do you get to meet the president, you know, the United States? Well, you can't. You can't just, you know, make an appointment or just walk through the gate of the White House, right? As soon as you do that, they arrest you. You're a nut, right? You can't just walk in there, right? But if you know someone right, who's close to the president, then you can maybe get an audience. You maybe have some, you know, meeting, right? So the idea is that there's some relationship there. He responds to a personal appeal, not somebody you don't know. So right now, of course, Krishna is intimately connected to us. We're intimately connected to Krishna. But we are kind of on the outside. We have chosen to attenuate that relationship, to estrange ourselves from God. And therefore, we're in a kind of a reformatory where we're not allowed to intimately associate with him or to know him. So how can we know him then? By his revelation, by his own desire. The famous verse that Prabhupada quotes in one purport here, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhave Grayam Indriyai. That Shri Krishna Nama, the holy name of Krishna, etc., his form, personality, entourage, planets, all of the reality, we cannot grasp with these senses of ours. We can't see the spirit. It's too subtle. It's far beyond the... We can't even see the air. And that's a material element. Can we see the ether? Can we see the mind? We know they exist, but we can't perceive them. What to speak of spirit, which is much finer than even the intelligence? So there's this whole world, this whole, you know, that's created, that's composed purely of spirit, that's invisible to us now. So this verse says, Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhave Grayam Indriya. You cannot grasp, you cannot perceive the reality, the real nature of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna with our present senses. But, that's only the first half of the verse, Sevan Mukhi Jivaro Swayam Eva Spuratyada. Very important concept here. That by beginning to serve him, by serving Krishna, taking up the service, beginning with the tongue, chanting the holy name, hearing, tasting prasad, then eventually the Lord reveals himself proportionally to our purification, proportionate to our surrender and our love, basically. So in this verse, Prabhupada quotes another verse from Lord Brahma's prayers. Now, it's important the context, you know, with these, that these verses are spoken in. So what happened is Lord Brahma, he's the creator of the universe. He's known as Vidhi, meaning that he's full of knowledge. He was infused with knowledge by Krishna directly. And can you imagine the intelligence it takes to engineer this universe? Just consider the complexity of our own bodies. You know, there's a blueprint. There's intelligence behind it. Everything. You know, I mean, when I was in school, you know, in grade school and high school, you learned something about, you know, the anatomy and the organic chemistry and all of the things that are going on just to make the body live from one day to another, from one moment to another. Right? So, and it's all the different species and the planets and everything going on. That's all thought out by Brahma. He's given the intelligence by Krishna, but he's got this intelligence. Now, what happened was that Brahma, he's the god of gods, you know. From him, Shiva is manifested, you know, actually. So he comes down to Vrindavan when Krishna's there. You know, he's curious to see. And there he sees Krishna not even herding the cows, but herding the calves. They first give him the calves to herd to get practiced. This is standard. And so there he is playing with his boys, you know, and the calves. And he's got the little flute, and he's got a little, you know, little yogurt in his hand, and he's having lunch. And Brahma says, this is the one they're saying is God? This is the one they're saying is the personality of God? My father, because he knew that he had been manifest from Narayan, from Garbhadaksha Vishnu, you know, huge thing. So he was bewildered. This is called the Brahma Vimohan Leela, the pastime in which Brahma is bewildered, you know, for a purpose. It's Krishna's Leela. Brahma's not a demon or anything. He was just bewildered. So he wanted to test to see if this was really his you know, the Supreme Personality of God. So he arranged for the calves wandered away. You know, they went to get grass. So the boys wanted to go. So Krishna says, no, I'll go find them. You keep taking lunch. They were taking lunch on the bank of the Yamuna. So he goes to find the calves, but they're gone. Brahma has taken the calves and put them under the mystic slumber and hidden them away in a cave somewhere. So Chris is looking, there's no calves. He comes back and the boys are gone. Brahma also took the boys. So now Chris is all alone there. He says, oh, you know, he knows it is Brahma, you know. So he says, I can't go back alone. The parents and it will be devastated without their sons. And the cows will also be devastated without their calves. So he says, what does he do? He manifests, he expands into all the different boys, you know, thousands of them, and the calves, with all their individual personalities. You know, everybody's an individual, right? So everyone has his idiosyncrasies. So in that way, he goes back. All the calves and the boys are there. Nobody knows the difference. Even Balaram doesn't see what's going on right away. But there's a big difference. What happens is, because all of these cows and the mothers, they all love Krishna, even more than their children. But they love their children, you know, and they come home and they feed them and bathe them and do everything that mothers do. So the boys go home and the calves go home, you know, to their cow pens and everything. But somehow there's a difference, and the difference is that the intensity of the love of the mothers for the boys and the cows for the calves is increasing. It increases, day by day. It goes on for a whole year like this. They didn't keep going, you know. And Balaram says, what's going on here? You know, I mean, Vrindavan is already like an ocean of love for Krishna, but now the love has expanded even more. And there's all of this, and seemingly more than is necessary. There's one pastime just before the end of a year where the cows are on a hill with the cowherd men, and they see these calves. Now, these calves are grown up a little bit now, so they have their new calves, but these particular calves, which are Krishna calves that they want to be with, and they run down this hill, and the cowherd men can't stop them. You know, they're just trundling down that hill until finally they get to their calves, and they start licking their bodies, you know. And Balaram says, what's going on here? You know, this is more than necessary. And the cowherd men come down, you know, and they're angry and upset because they couldn't control their cows. But as soon as they see the boys, their own boys, they immediately lose their anger and they smell their heads and they embrace them and their old tears are coming down. So Brahma says, this is too much. What's going on? So he asked Krishna, and Krishna told him, he explained to him what's going on. So now, this is another lesson. There's a lot going on in this pastime. So the another thing we learned is that the time is different, that Brahma lives for 311 trillion 40 billion years, which corresponds to our 100 years. So everything is much faster. So our one moment here is like a whole year for him. Or our 1 year for him, our 1 year is just like a moment for him. So he's taking these calves and boys, and right away he's thinking, oh, what have I done? Maybe I've made a mistake. So he comes back, and then he sees all these boys and calves playing, and he's totally bewildered because he says, I put them into my mystic slumber. So now he comes down off of his swan, and he's down there, and then he sees that the very boys and the calves, they turn into Vishnu forms. And all of the living entities in Vrindavan are worshipping them, and they have tulsi leaves all over them and everything. And now Brahma's really bewildered. Now he's kind of stunned. Now he doesn't know what's going on. And he realizes, oh, this is really my father. This is, you know, this little boy, he may be disguised as a little coward boy, but he's actually God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so in that mood, he falls down. He's in ecstasy. He keeps bowing down. His tears are coming down. And he offers prayers. Very important chapter. It takes chapter 14 of the 10th canto. You can reference it. Many important. Here's the most learned person in the universe now offering prayers. And there are many commentaries by our acharyas. So this is one of those prayers. And it's right to the point. So it says, Atapite deva, my dear Lord, Atapite deva badamba jadoya prasada leshanugatehevihi. Only if one gets a little of your mercy, a little, this lesha means a little particle of your prasad, can they understand you in truth? Janati tattvam. This word tattvam is very important because the whole verse that we started with from the Bhagavad Gita is that the impersonalists, they know of Krishna, but they don't know of him in truth. They're thinking that he's derived from the Brahman effulgence. And I met one like that. I met an impersonalist before I joined the temple in 1970. It was late 1972. And there's this whole other mission. You probably know of it, the Ramakrishna mission. And they're basically impersonalists, although they have, it's like, you can follow whatever path you want, you know, and they have some bhakti books in there. But the leader, this was in New York City, he was an impersonalist. He was a young man. He had taken over for an older gentleman who had met Prabhupada, actually a few years earlier. Nikalananda Swami. So this gentleman, he was telling me, he was very skilled at speaking Bhagavad Gita, and I was attracted to that. You know, I didn't know much about anything. But he was telling me directly, and I recall, how the bhakti is for the mass, the emotional masses. But those who really know the truth, they go for the gyan. Meaning that the ultimate truth is impersonal. That knowledge is really the thing you're looking for. Not this emotion, you know, because they need something to meditate on, so there's a form of God, you know. But beyond the form is the white light, the effulgence. Prabhupada railed about that. And at the end of the ninth chapter, there's a verse in which another so-called Gita scholar was saying, it's not to Krishna that we have to surrender, but to that which speaks through Krishna, the impersonal within Krishna. No. There's no meaning to the saying that the soul of Krishna. He's solid soul. He's solid spirit. So the point here is that unless you get a little mercy of Krishna by the process of devotional service, you cannot understand God in truth. And you may make a big philosophy, and it may sound right. You may even find places in the Upanishads and other books, even the Gita, that seem to support it. But ultimately, you're going to stay bewildered. You're not going to understand that the absolute truth is a person. And so the verse goes on, Janati tattvam bhagavan mahimno, the glory of Bhagavan. Na chanya eko pichadam machi. No, nobody else. Anya eko means no one else, even after cogitating for a long time. This chidam vachinvan, which means reading the Vedas for a long time or doing anything for a long time. So this is the path to actually know God, because he will reveal, depending on our sincerity and our purity. He reveals progressively. That's the purpose of this verse. And so you get people, the abuddhaya, the fools, they may speak very nicely, but they're still fools, who think that avyaktam vyaktam apanam means from the invisible, from the non-dual, unknowable white light, has come this visible form of Krishna. No. The hierarchy is like this. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavanati, Shabdite. Meaning that these are all absolute truth. The Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. The first understanding is Brahman. Most elementary. You see? Satchit Ananda. Hare Krishna. Welcome. Come on in. Yeah. Just sit on this side, Prabhu. Come on, men's side. Yeah. Both of you. Thank you. Hey, you brought your own zafir. It's a good sign. ready to sit. Good. So where was I? Oh yeah, the hierarchy. Thank you. So this is explained second chapter, first canto, where there's this whole series of verses. You know, what is real dharma? And then it said, the absolute truth is known in three phases. Vadanti tattvavidas. Tattvavidas means the knowers of the truth have declared, written and declared. Tattvam yajnanam advayam. This non-dual truth. There's no duality in Krishna. There's all an up and down and back and, you know. It's not like that. Brahmeti paramatmiti bhagavaniti shabdite. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Brahman is the diffuse, undifferentiated white light. Then Paramatma is the localized aspect within everyone's heart. Paramatma. Hare Krishna. You want to take a zafu also? Huh? Take a zafu there. Right behind you. Yeah, you can take that. Good. Hare Krishna. And then there's Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please come on the inside. You're on the side. That's it. Thank you. So, Bhagavan includes the others. If you realize Bhagavan, that's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you automatically realize the localized super soul and the Brahman effulgence. This is the idea. So this whole purport is explaining that even Shankaracharya, he probably would quote this, he has this phrase, Narayano Paro Vyaktat. This is one of the phrases of Shankaracharya. Narayano Paro Vyaktat. The word Vyaktat is here, Avyakta. You see? That Narayan is beyond the visible. In other words, Narayan, the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the supreme Vishnu form is Krishna, non-different, is that form beyond the invisible Brahman effulgence. He admits that. And in the final phrase, when he was leaving his body, he's chastising the disciples. Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Mudabade. It says, worship Govinda. Worship Govinda. All of this, Sanskrit analysis and logic chopping will not help you at the time of death. You have to fix your mind on Govinda. So this verse is important. They do not know. You cannot know. Param bhavam ajanada. They do not know my supreme nature. And anuttamam means that there's nothing beyond me. This we learn early in the chapter. Where Krishna says, here's another verse, Mattak padatanang nanyat. There is nothing beyond me. Everything is strung on me like pearls are strung on a thread. Now, what is that quality of that? If you look at a nice pearl necklace, a quality pearl necklace, right? You don't see the thread. You see the pearls, right? But without that thread, the pearls scatter. Similarly, this whole world is working, hangs together because Krishna's there. But you don't see him. He's the force beyond. But he's the essential force supporting everything. And that force is manifest as a super soul. Within every atom, within every heart. That's maintaining everything. So this is we have to have that faith. And by the process of devotional service, again, that's the only way. Bhaktya mam abhijanati, that we learn in the 18th chapter. Bhaktya mam abhijanati, yava nischasmi, tattvataha. There's the word tattva again. Only by bhakti can I be understood as I am. Not by any other means. So we're doing the right thing. Any questions on this particular verse and purport? Krishna will expand on this in the next verse. Okay, text 25, we can chant together. I'll say, you say. Naham prakasha sarvasya. Yoga maya samavritaha. Mudhoyam nabhijanati. Lokomam ajamabhyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency. And therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Purport. It may be argued that since Krishna was visible to everyone when he was present on this earth, then how can it be said that he is not manifest to everyone? Manifest actually means visible. How can it say that he's not visible to everyone? But actually, he was not manifest to everyone. When Krishna was present, there were only a few people who could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the assembly of the Kurus, when Shishupal spoke against Krishna's being elected president of the assembly, Bhishma supported him and proclaimed him to be the Supreme God. Similarly, the Pandavas and a few others knew that he was the Supreme, but not everyone. He was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that but for his pure devotees, all men consider him to be like themselves. He was manifest only to his devotees as the reservoir of all pleasure. But to others, to unintelligent non-devotees, he was covered by his internal potency. In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. This Yogamaya curtain is also confirmed in the Ishopanishad Mantra 15, in which the devotee prays, Hiranmayena patrena satyasyapi hitam mukham tatvam pushan apavranu satya dharmaya drishteye. O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore I pray that you will also maintain me. Your transcendental form is covered by the Yogamaya. The Brahma Jyoti is the covering of the internal potency. May you kindly remove this glowing effulgence that impedes my seeing your Satchidananda Vigraha, your eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his transcendental form of bliss and knowledge is covered by the internal potency of the Brahma Jyoti. And the less intelligent impersonalists cannot see the Supreme on this account. Also in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.7, there is this prayer by Brahma. O Supreme Personality of God, and O Super Soul, O Master of all mystery, who can calculate your potency and pastimes in this world? You are always expanding your internal potency, and therefore no one can understand you. Learned scientists and learned scholars can examine the atomic constitution of the material world or even the planets, but still they are unable to calculate your energy and potency, although you are present before them. The Supreme Personality of God, Lord Krishna, is not only unborn, but also abhyaya, inexhaustible. His eternal form is bliss and knowledge, and his energies are all inexhaustible. So he's expanding on this theme here, that he's not manifest as he is to everyone. Now, in one sense, this whole universe is God. There's a verse like that. Idami Vishram Bhagavan. Idami Vishram Bhagavan. This Vishva universe is Bhagavan. Ivetaro, but it seems to be different. Without, now, this word Yogamaya, first of all, this is maybe puzzling to some of you, because there's Yogamaya and Mahamaya, right? There's two kinds of Maya. Maya means that which is not. There's the illusory energy. Now, the way that Yogamaya works in Krishna's pastimes is that depending on the intensity of your relation with Krishna, say as a friend, as a parent, or even as a lover, Krishna will cover his greatness and power so you can relate to him in an intimate way. This is what bhakti ultimately brings us to. Is there any other religion in the world where you can actually think of and exist and relate to God as a friend or as a little child? As your child? No. All religions are God is very great, we are very small, we depend on him, please save me, please give me, you know, whatever I'm praying for. We all see ourselves, which we really are, as completely dependent on him. That's very good. But to understand someone intimately, you need to have an intimate relationship. Someone who's just a boss. You know, you don't know so much about your boss. You know what you need to know to do your job. But you don't know, you know, probably, you know, what family life, what he likes, you know, his interests and all of these different things. It's not that kind of relationship. So a friend-to-friend relationship, what to speak of parent-to-child relationship, is much more intimate and pleasing. You know, there's an exchange of love there. So that's where Yogamaya comes in Krishna's pastimes. She covers his majesty so that you can relate to him in an intimate way. It's like Mother Yashoda. God has, he wants to have all of these intimate personal relationships. If you think about it, what is it that makes life worth living in this world? Isn't it? It's loving relationships. You have all the money in the world, but you're in a big room all alone, you know, you're miserable. But some poor farmer there in Bengal, they've done studies actually. The happiest country in the world, they have the happiness quotient, you know, they do a survey. Bangladesh, you know, which is one of the poorest countries in the world. But you have, you know, strong families, people are living in the country, you know. And they're basically satisfied with their lives, you know. So why? Because there's all of these personal relationships that make life pleasing. So that's true for God also. You know, why should he not have that kind of pleasure? Is he lacking in something? No. He has it to perfection. The friendship and the parents and the loving and the servant and all of that is perfect. So in order for him to do that, you can't be, just like in chapter 11, he takes away the Yogamaya and he reveals himself as this universal form, you know, with thousands of mouths and devouring the whole universe and blazing eyes, and Arjun's frightened. The friendship is lost there, you know, because he's actually a friend of Krishna. He's frightened. He said, "I'm frightened. Please show me your other form, you know, I've had enough already." He asked to see it. Krishna showed it to him and he withdrew it. So Yogamaya, in that set, covers Krishna's majesty so you can get closer to him and know him on an intimate level. But Mahamaya is an expansion of Yogamaya. They're not actually different personalities. So you forget Krishna's majesty to learn more about Krishna's personal nature. But we don't want to know, you know, either one. You know, the conditioned soul wants to forget Krishna entirely. And that's where we're at, you know. And so that's Mahamaya, an expansion of Yogamaya. So that's why he uses the same word here. That should be understood. So that covers them, the unintelligent. And we've been, you know, you can get, say, covered for millions of births in this ignorance. Simply dealing with what you perceive with the senses, you know, and with no guidance, with no access to, you know, higher knowledge, you're sure to perform all kinds of sinful activity and then lose the human form of life. This is a very important point, is that we now have the human form. Everyone sitting here is a human body, a human form, you know. Very rare. You know, when you understand a little bit about the process of transmigration and karma, you know, there are all these other kinds of life out there. They all have souls. You know, when you see any, you know, evidence of consciousness, that means there's a soul there, even in the plants. They're also conscious. I remember reading a book many years ago called The Secret Life of Plants. Has anyone heard of that? Yeah. It's not such a common book now, but it was a kind of a revolutionary book when it came out. Findhorn in Scotland, right? And how they did all this study. Yeah, plants definitely respond to emotion. I've had this plant growing in my apartment now. I've been here for 22 years. It's about a 22-year-old plant. I just water it, and we play bhajans, and they very much like to hear Prabhupada sing. I don't do anything with this plant, and it's growing, growing, growing. I have to clip it, growing, growing, growing. You know? And I don't... But if I know that if I would scream and yell at the plant, you know, and everything, then it would shrivel up. They've done tests like that. So there's consciousness there, even in the plant. What to speak of the insects, the animals, the higher beings, cows, human beings. But human beings have a special gift. We have this higher intelligence, which we can use to end this entrapment in different material bodies, which means birth, death, old age, and disease, and suffering. So using that intelligence means inquiring into this subject matter. Who am I? Who is this personality of Godhead? Who is the creator? What is this world? You know, somehow or other, they've come to the conclusion, they teach it in the schools, that this world arose up from undifferentiated, you know, matter, that it just organized itself, that life has arisen from matter. That's the basic principle. What else is the evolutionary system? I mean, a child can understand. That's ridiculous. You know? I don't care how long it is. No matter how long, you know, millions and millions of years, without the touch of an intelligent being, this matter is not going to organize itself into anything. A car, what to speak of a human being? It always takes the higher intelligence manipulating and using these things. So now we have this intelligence, which we can inquire. So the injunction, I'll give you two verses here. If we don't want to be like this, where we are covered over and unable to understand the truth, which is what Krishna is saying now, mudhoyam, fools, he says in the 11th canto, it says, labdva sudurlabham idam bahusam bhavante manushyam artadamanityam apiha dhira turnam yateta napateta namitya yavad nikshaya saya vishayakala sarvataksyat. The idea is, don't we want the best thing for ourselves? The Shreya. We don't want more pain, do we? No, we want happiness. We want knowledge. We want eternal life. Right? Everyone wants that. So this is called Nikshreyasa, the ultimate good. So what this verse says is that after many, many births, Bahusambhavante, we've attained this human form, Manushyam. And it's Artadam, very significant word. Artadam. It means can give you the goal. It can give you the real value. Your swa-arta, swarta. But it's temporary, like every other form. Every one of us will die eventually. So it's anityam. So one has to be dira. One has to be sober-minded and really think over things. What is the ultimate goal that I'm looking for here? And when you come in contact with the knowledge and the process of bhakti yoga, then turnam yateta, one has to quickly, without wasting time procrastinating, strive for this ultimate good, nikshaya saya. Because the body is subject to death at any moment. We don't know how long we have. So therefore, don't waste time. Nikshaya saya, because after all, in all these other forms we've been through, we've had opportunity for sense gratification of all different varieties. We've already experienced it. And all it's gotten us is another body, you know, for suffering. It doesn't help. It's the source of our suffering. The sense pleasure is the source of our suffering. So we have to find another pleasure, because we're pleasure seeking. And that real pleasure comes from contacting God, the reservoir of pleasure. Satchit Ananda. We're also Satchit Ananda. You know? But the sense pleasure is anything but that. It's the source of misery. And the other verse, which Krishna speaks to Uddhava, Nirdeham adyam sulabham sudurlabham prabham sukalpam gunukaradharam. It says this human form, Nirdeham, is full of all kinds of facilities. We have the ears, we have the intelligence, we have the voice, and now we've got actually association by Prabhupada's great compassion, creating this society. We have the knowledge and everything. So adyam, sulabham sudulabham. And here he says, it's very rare. After all, how many of us human beings are there on this planet? Mm-hmm. 7 billion. You know, we've reached 7 billion. There are that many insects on this block. Probably twice as many. You know, there's all kinds of billions and trillions of other living entities. But here we are, a few human beings. And amongst them, a very rare few who are even interested in this. Most people are living hand to mouth or paycheck to paycheck. You know, it doesn't... So, very rare. Sulabham sudulabham. And it's very difficult to find. So, plavam sukalpam, it's like a boat. You see, we're in an ocean. Sometimes this material world is compared to an ocean, sometimes to a forest fire. So both are dangerous places. So we're an ocean of birth and death. You know, we're in it. We don't even know we're in it. So we're in, but it's dangerous. So the human body is like a boat to cross over that ocean. A very finely constructed boat with a nice captain, namely the spiritual master. And favorable winds in the form of these Vedas that Krishna has spoken. Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, he also wrote that. It's Vyasadeva. So with all of these good facilities, we have the boat, we have the captain, we have the favorable winds. It says, Puman Bhavabdim Natarid, if a human being doesn't cross over this ocean, it's called Atmaha, a killer of the soul. You know, you can't kill the soul, but you can practically be, you know, thousands of births more, but why, you know, it's called killer of the soul. So we should take advantage of this process now. You know, Krishna is giving us the key here. Okay, and so here this verse, even in the Upanishads, now this is why the Isha Upanishad is so important, because it's about the Isha. Many times the Upanishads deal with this Brahman aspect, you know. But this particular Upanishad talks about the Isha. That's what we call the Isha. Isha is the Lord. And here, near the end of this Isha Upanishad, there's the prayer by the devotee, Hiranmanayena Patrena, your blinding effulgence is preventing me from seeing your face. The word mukham is there. You can't deny it. Please withdraw that effulgence so I can see your beautiful face. In other words, the effulgence is simply the glow of the Lord's body. Beyond that is the eternal form of God. Right in the Upanishad. So it's often quoted, this verse and this whole Upanishad. And again, we have Brahma's prayers. This is the same chapter where he's saying, Yeah. The scientists may investigate from here to eternity and do, you know, and they're doing it, you know, building the multi-billion-dollar particle accelerators, finding the different muons and the different things. Oh, now we're getting down to the real essence of, no, you'll never find it. They'll never be able to understand Krishna that way. Because again, he only reveals himself to the devotees, not the speculators, not the scientists. That's how we can know the truth. Any questions, comments? On these points. All right, we're going to read one more verse. We don't have time to do Krishna book. Now, Krishna's omniscient. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani chabhutani mam tu veda nakashchana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Purport. Here, the question of personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were Maya, or material, as the impersonalists consider him to be, then, like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Anyone with a material body cannot remember his past life, nor can he foretell his future life, nor can he predict the outcome of his present life. Therefore, he cannot know what is happening in past, present, and future. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present, and future. Unlike the ordinary human being, Lord Krishna clearly says that he completely knows what happened in the past, what is happening in the present, and what will happen in the future. In the fourth chapter, we have seen that Lord Krishna remembers instructing Vivasvan, the sun god, millions of years ago. Krishna knows every living entity because he is situated in every living entity, being's heart, as Supersoul. But despite his presence in every living entity as Supersoul and his presence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the less intelligent, even if able to realize the impersonal Brahman, cannot realize Sri Krishna as the Supreme Person. Certainly, the transcendental body of Sri Krishna is not perishable. He is just like the sun, and Maya is like a cloud. In the material world, we can see that there is the sun and that there are clouds and different stars and planets. The clouds may cover all these in the sky temporarily, but this covering is only apparent to our limited vision. The sun, moon, and stars are not actually covered. Similarly, Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord. By his internal potency, he is not manifest to the less intelligent class of men. As is stated in the third verse of this chapter, out of millions and millions of men, some try to become perfect in this human form of life, and out of thousands and thousands of such perfected men, hardly one can understand what Lord Krishna is. Even if one is perfected by realization of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of God at Sri Krishna without being in Krishna consciousness. So past, present, and future, Krishna is omniscient in the true sense of the word. And no living entity can have that standard of omniscience. We can become much more knowledgeable. We can attain great insight. But we're dependent for all of our knowledge on Krishna. The Supersoul is giving us the intelligence by which we can know all these things. So Krishna sometimes covers, you know, as I was explaining, for the sake of Leela, he will cover the gopis. They don't know he's God, you know. But at other times, Brahma, he has all of this knowledge he can create. But whether it's Brahma or the ant or it doesn't anyone in between, no one can have the kind of knowledge that Krishna has. You imagine knowing everything that happened in the past, everything that's happening in present, and everything that's happening in the future. It just boggles the mind. That is true omniscience. That is the three, you know, omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent. And only God can have all three of those in fullness. You know. Any final comment? Thank you for your attention. We'll now have a little kirtan and prasadam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.